We all know about the positive effects exercise, especially aerobic exercise, has on the body. Now, it improves our entire circulatory system. Now, we're less likely to be stricken by chronic diseases such as diabetes, heart disease, and cancer. And we have much more energy. We move easier. I mean, we just feel better. Now, in addition to all these positive physical effects, emerging research is showing that exercise has just as much positive impact on our brains as it does on our bodies. Now, here to look at this phenomenon is Spencer Christian of KGO-TV San Francisco with three distinguished guests.
Mens sana in corpore sano. It's Latin for a sound mind in a sound body. While the cultural split between the mind and the body took place in Western civilization some 2,500 years ago, new research is showing that these aspects of human life are so intricately connected, so closely tied together, that if we continue to view them as separate, we do so at our own peril. But if we look to change our perspective and view the mind and body as fully integrated, especially when it comes to exercise, mental processing, and learning, then the benefits may end up being far greater than anything we could imagine. With us to examine this issue are three leading researchers in the growing field of neuroscience. Fernando Gomez Pinilla is professor of physiological science at UCLA. His work in neuroscience research is widely published, including showing up in elite publications such as Nature magazine. Charles Hillman is an associate professor in the Department of Kinesiology and Community Health at University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. Professor Hillman loves ice hockey and often laces up the skates to practice with the university hockey team. And John Rady is associate clinical professor of psychiatry at Harvard Medical School. Professor Rady has published more than 60 papers in peer-reviewed journals in the fields of psychiatry and psychopharmacology and has written or co-authored several books, including his latest, Spark, The Revolutionary New Science of Exercise and the Brain. Gentlemen, thank you for being with us today. Let's start with Professor Hillman. As I understand it, you became interested in this connection between exercise and the brain when you noticed that a certain group of students in your classes consistently performed better on your exams than others did. Tell us about this.
My interest is prior to that. I originally was studying the field of aging and how physical activity affects cognitive health and aging. But as I sort of watched statistics and saw that, you know, we're getting older as a country, but yet some of these problems are emerging earlier in the lifespan, I paired that with some of the findings from my or non-empirical findings, I should say, from my classroom, where I noticed that some of the athletes performed better than some of the non-athletes, and I was curious about this dumb jock phenomena.
Right. And did you also do a study with elementary school students on exercise and mental processing?
Several.
Yeah, so can you give us some of the key findings from that study?
We had a couple studies. We've done some in the laboratory where we studied the effects of fitness on brain and cognition using an application of EEG to study the electrical systems of the brain. And then we've also done some work in the schools where we've looked at the connections between how well they perform on tests of physical fitness in physical education classes and how well they perform on academic achievement tests of math and reading.
So is it fair to say then that the bottom line is that exercise can improve mental performance? It can make you smarter, if you will.
I will say that there's a definite connection between them, yes.
Okay. Let me go to Professor Rady. If, in fact, there is this connection, just for the sake of conversation, I'll say exercise can make you smarter. How does this work? What goes on in the brain as a result of physical activity that helps the brain perform more efficiently?
Well, for the short term, it pumps up a lot of our neurochemicals, serotonin, dopamine, norepinephrine that we all sort of hear about all the time, but it also causes an onrush of these new factors called nerve growth factors that I long ago called miracle growth for the brain or brain fertilizer, that actually all this promotes our nerve cells, optimizes them to get to the level where they are more able and ready to bind one to another, which is the beginning building block of learning and memory.
And there is a fairly large body of research to support this, right? I mean, this isn't just, what we're talking about today is not just the result of recent studies. This has been going on for years, right?
Right. Really began back in 95 or so when the study came out about exercise being a prevention in cognitive decline in Alzheimer's disease. Mm-hmm. And that was a weird finding at that point, and people didn't know why. And then there began this real move to look at how exercise really affected the brain. And thus we began testing mice and rats and then people at the same time. And began to see this effect.
I'm glad you brought up the subject of testing mice and rats, because now Professor Gomez-Pinilla, I'd like you to explain the study that you did with rats related to exercise and the brain, and tell us what you learned from this study.
Yeah, we started working on this in 1995, and at that time the connection between exercise and the brain didn't match very well for a lot of people, and even I can tell you that it was very difficult to publish the first study that we performed. What we did actually was to use animal models, particularly rats, that they were running on a wheel, and we were able to measure a certain chemical in the brain, particularly neurotrophins, and when we tried to publish the first group of studies, for a lot of people, even journals, scientific journals, didn't match that the main findings were in the hippocampus, for a lot of people, isn't it, there was no connection between regions like hippocampus that are related to learning and memory and the effect of exercise. They were asking why we didn't work in the spinal cord, for example, that it was more related to the physical activity. So essentially this finding was that we found that the particular trophic factor called brain-derived neurotrophic factor,
right,
which this is a protein that has been found for several years already, that for its effects on regeneration, that has been found that this protein in the brain actually is very important for the growth of connections and things like that. And lately, around 1995, people start looking at this protein more related to behavior. I mean, for example, the effect of exercise on the brain and how this could connect with improvement of cognitive function. And so all of this was a very exciting time. And so finally, we were able to publish the first study in Nature, showing that this BDNF was increased in the hippocampus, again, an area related to learning and memory, that actually was making a connection for what the other Professor Hillman and Reitit are discussing there in terms of human studies.
Right. So essentially, your findings are consistent with other studies that physical activity enhances cognitive function and brain function overall. So I'm going to pose this question first to Professor Reitit, but you can all feel free to join the discussion. What brain chemicals, or how many brain chemicals, I should say, are involved in this exercise impacts the brain process? And how do these chemicals affect brain function?
Well, I think the fact is that many, many brain chemicals, I mean, the list grows and grows every day as we get more and more aware of what's happening in the brain. But so it's not a matter of one or two, and it's a balance often. But there are signals that come up from our body, that are produced in the body, mm-hmm, that also impact the brain and also impact learning. So that by moving our muscles, and we create stress on our muscles, and it sends out factors that eventually get up to the brain and have an effect on helping us wire in learning and also helps to create more nerve cells. That's the real sexy part of neuroplasticity these days.
Right.
And everybody talks about that. But really, with the real learning that we know of, we're talking about making the nerve cells more receptive to bind one to another. And there's a slew of different factors, VEGF, IGF-1, FGF-2, that I talk about and mention in my book, which tries to synthesize a lot of the research and make it understandable to people that Dr. Pania and Dr. Hillman have been doing over the years. I mean, it's a marvelous area right now, and we're learning so much more about how exercise affects and impacts brain health, as well as the ability of the brain to learn new material.
Well, there's one word that I think most of us lay people are familiar with, and that is endorphins. We often hear that as a result of exercise, endorphins are released into the brain. What are endorphins and how do they affect us?
Endorphins are really the our body and brain's internal morphine. When I got interested in exercise in the 70s, endorphins were just discovered the endorphin receptor was just characterized in the brain. And that was a big deal, along with the marathoning here in Boston, and everybody was measuring everything to see why people felt better after exercising, and they measured peripheral levels of endorphins, and they were very much raised because our muscles and our bones and everything that are stressed releases endorphins. Mm-hmm. However, they really don't cross into the brain itself, and the brain itself has endorphins, and they're released in exercising, but what people think of as the endorphin rush really occurs after a pretty good bolus of exercise or bout of exercise. You really have to push yourself it really quite a ways, most people, to get this endorphin rush. But all kinds of chemicals are released almost immediately, like more the dopamine and norepinephrine and eventually serotonin, because these are the neurochemicals that we, as a psychiatrist, try to address with our antidepressants, our stimulants like Ritalin and Dexedrine. And I've always said that having a bout of exercise is a little bit, it's like taking a little bit of Ritalin or a little bit of Prozac, just at the right level in the right place, so that you feel better, you feel more focused, you're optimizing the learner to not be fidgeting and moving around so much, but
right,
to remain in their seat.
And I think all of us who have exercised have experienced that exercise high, as we call it. So let me ask Professor Hillman, now that we've talked about the neurochemicals that are released into the brain as a result of exercise, what areas of the brain are affected by exercise, especially aerobic activity, and how does this workout affect the brain function?
A lot of the brain areas that are active, activated by exercise, grows out of some of this neurochemical discussion we're having. So for instance, the prefrontal cortex, an area of the brain that's last to develop during the lifespan, also sort of the last over the course of evolution to develop, is one of the areas that's most affected by exercise. I'd say probably the prefrontal cortex and the hippocampus, as Dr. Gomez-Pinilla talked about before. And the processes that are influenced by prefrontal cortex are those that are termed executive control processes. They're higher order cognitive processes that are involved in things like planning and scheduling, being able to distinguish between multiple things in your environment or multitasking.
Mm-hmm.
And so while cognition in general is thought to be affected by aerobic exercise, these processes tend to be disproportionately affected. That is, that they are more affected than other types of cognitive processes.
And how soon after a workout will the effects of the workout be felt?
That depends. We have data in our laboratory showing that immediately afterwards, mm-hmm. and also almost an hour later, executive processes are benefited by an acute bout of exercise that's about moderate intensity.
So, Professor Gomez-Pinilla, what happens if, after exercising over an extended period of time, a person stops exercising? Does your brain remain just as sharp from the prior conditioning, or does it lose some of its speed and efficiency as you become less active?
Yeah, I would say that in general loses some capacity, but the new studies indicate that the longer that you exercise, the longer that this chemical stay on the brain after you stop exercising.
Mm.
So if you exercise 1 year or 2 years, I would say you have more chances if you suddenly stop exercising, that these chemicals are going to stay in the brain. So the however, there are many issues to take into consideration with this, since there are many processes related to exercise, like many hormones also that they are regulated by the process of exercise. So then, if we stop exercising, also we can get several effects in terms of, for example, some secondary effect of stress. That can be related also to this sudden deprivation of exercise.
Right. So the longer the period of time a person exercises, the longer the brain is likely to retain the helpful effects of these neurochemicals that are produced by the exercise.
Exactly.
So if that's the case, then how does all this relate to our sedentary society, which has resulted in 2/3 of the adult population being overweight or in some cases obese, and certainly inactive? This seems to be a huge health-related issue, but it seems from what you gentlemen are saying, this is also a brain issue. I'm wondering if this has implications for ailments like Alzheimer's disease or other forms of dementia.
Yeah, certainly. The situation is a long story that in order to understand these events, we have to go back millions of years in the evolution.
Mm-hmm.
So, making a very long story short, I can tell you that the genes in our body and the brain were built to sustain high levels of activity. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can imagine, isn't it, that what we have in our society is a completely different situation that people had, I would say, even 50 years ago, isn't it? All the modernization, transportation, and the lack of activity. So essentially what happened, if the genes are built to sustain high levels of activity, and suddenly in the period, I would say, of 10 years, 50 years, or 100 years, we stop practicing this type of activity, I mean, obviously, something is going to happen, and thus there are many hypotheses which actually you can see the results, and you mentioned already that in terms of the many diseases which are a product of the modern society,
right,
to be related to this, that and many studies is needed in terms of cancer or many other diseases that have been related to the changes in lifestyle, not only exercise, also diet, and many other effects.
Sure.
So that's the main explanation here, is that the genes are designed to sustain levels of activity. For any reason we don't have it, I would say that we start actually promoting many reactions in the physiology that we start actually getting into a situation of creating risk factors for diseases.
Right.
And essentially also that some people have very good genes, isn't it? I mean, the very strong genes that they, but for people who, I mean, normal people, average people, our genes have some type of weakness, and for this we need to the full power of exercise and all of that to keep the system working, and essentially that's the idea.
Okay. Well, then let's turn our discussion back to how exercise impacts learning in children. Now, Professor Hillman, as you mentioned earlier, you've done studies on this, how exercise impacts mental function of students. Does exercise impact the brains of kids in the same way it does adults, or is there a difference?
It impacts the brain and certainly the associated cognitive processes, but the exact relationship between adults and kids hasn't been completely worked out.
Mm-hmm.
So what we find in young adults and older adults is that it is disproportionately larger for executive control tasks, that is, prefrontally mediated tasks. In kids, we see more of a general effect. So we have a couple studies in the lab that have looked at following acute bouts of exercise or based on differences in fitness. And we find that regardless of the amount of executive load required, more fit or following acute bouts of exercise, these kids perform better. And likely it's because they lack prefrontal tissue at that age, and it's, you know, it's still in a process of growing.
Right, right. And Dr. Rady, in your book, Spark, you say that exercise can affect the brain in a way that makes it easier for kids to learn math, for example, by playing the piano, as if there's a sort of a carryover effect. Can you explain that?
You set up the same structures. You begin to set up sequencing and order and imagining abstractly what the sounds like and all that. It leads to a background for doing math problems. But just to support this whole issue, is in my book, in Chapter 1, I talk about this revolutionary, what I see as revolutionary school system in Naperville, Illinois, that over the past 15 years has really integrated exercise into the lives of all of the children in their school system, and which numbered 19,000 kids in this school district. And they have 3% of the children are deemed to be overweight, and their performance is very high on the state-monitored test. And some 3 years ago, they lobbied to have their ninth graders take the International Science and Math Test and alone, sort of outside the box, because this is a test that the U.S. usually scores 15th or 20th compared to the East Asian countries and Eastern Europe countries. And they scored number one in the world in science and number six in math. So even though they're spending 45 minutes a day or more exercising and devoting that to physical education, it didn't take away from their learning and their performance on intellectual tasks.
Well, I'm glad you brought this up, because it leads us right into the next area of discussion I was hoping to get into, it, and that is we've clearly established here that exercise and physical activity can help improve mental function and thereby academic performance. But the focus of most public schools seems to be on spending more time, having the students spend more time on math and language skills and other academic skills that can be tested on standardized exams. But they're spending, the kids are spending less and less time in physical education and doing physical activity. So do we need a shift here nationally in our focus on developing the full child? I'll start with Dr. Gomez, Professor Gomez Pena.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's something very important to consider, isn't it, that in order to boost practically all the capacity that you are discussing, learning and memory and all of that, I think we need to take seriously these education programs in order to boost levels of activity in high school, and not only that, I would say to create the conscious of the activity, and always I found so amazing, isn't it, that for example, in our society, that we are so much into the habit of sedentary lifestyle, that if we had to go, let's say, to the market, like one block away or two blocks away, I would say we drive, or for example, also the part of the culture, if for any reason we need to go to the second floor, to the next floor, we take the elevator, since we can take the stairways. So those are some of the aspects that I always think that we need to change the mentality in terms of starting in kids,
right.
I mean, with physical education programs, and also the idea that the activity is good is not only good. As I told you, biologically, is completely necessary. It's not just a recommendation. It's something that we need, in the same way that we have to eat or do other things.
Sure. I mean, it seems clear to me, but I'm just a layman listening to you three. Well, Professor Hillman, this is an election year. If you were named Secretary of Education, what changes would you make in our national educational programs in public schools to maximize students' performance?
I think this is actually a relatively easy fix. It's following up on what Dr. Gomez Pena said. We do spend for too much time worrying about academics, in the sense that I recently wrote a review along with a couple colleagues of mine where we covered the relationship between physical activity and school performance. And in that review, we couldn't find a single instance where time spent in physical education was negatively related to academic performance.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, in some of the cases, they actually took a group of kids and gave them less academic time in order to make room for physical education time. And they found that, at the very least, time spent in physical activity programs did not hinder academic performance, and other studies showed that it actually improved it. So if you consider the positive health benefits that are derived from being physically active, this line of research suggests that physical education is an important component of children's health, both physical and cognitive, as well as their well-being. It also provides them the necessary tools they need to be physically active throughout the course of their lifespan.
And Professor Reddy, would you like to add something to that before we get to our final question?
Well, yeah, I think that it starts early in our lives. We get ritualized, and we get to know the benefits of moving and exercising, and if it can be done in such a way that all the children are involved in it and not just the athletes, as it is in most schools these days, that it will make its impact known to the person and they'll carry on, let's hope, that not just by doing sports and being involved with that, which is very important, but also knowing that if they're running, they can control their attention a little bit, they can control their mood, they feel better, and they can help deal with their anxiety and stress issues, so that they have that knowledge and they can begin to, as they grow older, they can take that with them. And it's as important as anything else that they might learn in school.
Well, let me ask this final question. It may sound like kind of a big question, but this is for all three of you. Where is all of this research leading us? What I mean is, what does this connection between exercise and brain function tell us about untapped human potential, especially in young developing brains? Start with Professor Gomez Pinilla.
Yeah, I think it's going very far from here. That's my understanding. We have to think exercise as part of our lifestyle. So and we do many other things in connection with the exercise. And I think that's where it's going. I would say, I think it was very interesting to know that indeed exercise has effects on molecular systems in the brain, and also this can be related to cognitive function. But I want to emphasize, this is part of the whole picture, which is our lifestyle. And all the type of things that we do on everyday life, eating, isn't it, the type of food that we eat, the type of cognitive challenge that we have,
mm-hmm.
the type of things that we do during the day. And according to the medical research at this time, it's indicating that the results are indicating that all of these different type of lifestyle, exercise, food, and some other challenge, they work together, and they can potentiate their effects on brain function and body function. And I think that's quite interesting. We have to start thinking this, as I said, is in the whole spectrum. I mean, and that's also in terms of the biomedical research, is something very big is going on. So the NIH actually, spent an incredible amount of money, isn't it, funding research to map practically all the genes in the body, and now we know the sequence of all the genes in the body.
Right.
And there were a lot of expectations that with that, we could cure many diseases and everything. But so now we are kind of going back, isn't it, to the idea is it's not a completely brand new idea. I would say probably in the high school, most of us hear about this, the effect of the genotype plus the lifestyle actually was determining what we are, the phenotype. And I think in terms of the biomedical research, I think this is very important, isn't it, that myself as the part of a study section at the NIH is in its review and grants. I had the idea that the people are getting this new concept that in order to really understand a function and gene function, we need to consider the effect of lifestyle, like exercise and other types.
And final words from our other two, Professor Reddy?
Yes, I think the society is having to deal with this in terms of exercise, and especially in the schools, because of the obesity crisis, because our lives have changed so rapidly, because of what I call our cyber slaves that allow us to sit and be amused all the time, and the difficulties that brings and takes us away from being active participants in our lives. And I think we need to address that, and the schools are the first place to start.
And Professor Hillman?
Yeah, I would just follow up by saying that, both Dr. Ray and Dr. Gomez-Pinilla make good points about, that there is this, that exercise has to be considered within the whole sort of gamut of health behaviors. Dr. Gomez-Pinilla has an article called Revenge of the Sit. And I think it's a journal, Cognitive Research, if I remember correctly, and he makes a very good point about metabolic imbalance. And so we have to consider these issues of, how much we're taking in and how well we're expending our energy and its relationship to things such as obesity. And this is something that's going to have to change. I mean, we're not going to have much choice from a physical health perspective as a country.
And I understand that you practice what you preach with your 5-year-old son, AJ. You've got him out there on the ice playing hockey already?
Yeah, we spend quite a bit of time on the rink.
Well, I want to thank all of you for being with us today. Our best to AJ and his dad, Professor Charles Hillman of the University of Illinois, Professor Fernando Gomez-Pinilla of UCLA, and Professor John Rady of Harvard. A fascinating discussion. Thank you very much, gentlemen.
From what we just heard, it appears that being physically active is an indispensable part of a full, rich, and complete life, and has all kinds of implications for school children. Now, Joel, I think I know where you're going to be going with this and the Arete School.
Right, Martin. This one is kind of a slam dunk. If what our guests have just told us, with all this research showing the direct correlation between being physically active, especially in aerobic activity, and not only the fortifying of brain cells, but the growth of new brain cells, and especially in children, then it's obvious that we have to have the kids moving more and sitting less. But today's current effort in our schools is to spend more time, especially in language arts and math classes, because that's what all the standardized tests are about.
Right.
So the kids are basically sitting more. But the bottom line with all this research is the more you move around, the smarter you get. The more you sit, the more you lose it mentally. So we see this as the kids needing to spend more time being physically active, and with the curriculum of the Arete School, the kids are going to be involved with all kinds of sports activities and then studying the arts, the humanities, the sciences through these activities. And, it was the Greeks, the ancient Greeks, they knew about this connection between physical activity and the mind. It was Thoreau who said, "It seems when my legs begin walking, my mind begins working. Any writing I do sitting down is wooden." The Danish philosopher Kierkegaard said, "I have walked myself into my best thoughts."
Huh.
So, right, you see this throughout history. You see it in antiquity. You see it in the current research. So with the Arete School, physical activity will be the cornerstone, if you will, of the curriculum, the foundation from which the kids will study the arts, the humanities, and the sciences, much the way that it was done in at the time of the ancient Greeks. And so our current educational system is really kind of backwards, because the kids spend so much time, as we talked about, sitting. It's literally backwards. They should be moving so much more, and that should be the foundation for the learning. So we hope people will want to support this kind of effort, bring this kind of perspective into the public school system by helping make the Arete School a reality, so that we can then share this with public schools throughout the country. And all they have to do is click on donate just below the screen here to make that happen.